Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 90. My name is Karen. Your name is?
Kristen.
Yeah. Good job.
Only 10 episodes away from 100. Yeah.
That's like 2.5 months, right? So...
Yeah,
It's pretty close. Yee. We're getting up there. It feels weird to think that we've done 90 episodes. Like,
it really does.
We're moving at a really good clip. I feel like, you know, we've been podcasting for a long time. This is our newest show, so like, it still is exciting. And now I feel like our show is like older. You know, like we're an established show now. We're not the newbie anymore, and I like that.
And yes, for those of you who love listening to our voices and didn't know it, there's an entire hypeable pantheon of podcasts that feature one or both of our voices in many of them.
Yes.
So if you ever watched Once Upon a Time, there's that one. There's a very, very short-lived Sorkin podcast, because I'm obsessed with Aaron Sorkin. But yeah, there's so many. There's
good
a
old book
podcast.
Yep.
So there's, if you're ever looking for more of our voices, try searching for Hypeable, I'm guessing, in the Apple podcast, and you'll probably find a whole bunch of fun stuff.
For sure.
In addition to the ones that Subjectify Media hosts, including Rewatchable, which used to be Hypeable, but now is owned and operated by Subjectify Media.
Yeah. And if you do end up listening to any of those old ones, you can still tell us all about it, and you can reach out to us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We're switching things up a little bit this week. So last week, we said that we were going to do an episode on monuments. We are going to save that for next week now. This week is just going to be a news and a chapter discussion because I'm traveling out of town to go visit my friends in Rhode Island, and so we're recording these ahead of time, and just the way that things fell and to make it easier on us, we are kind of, you know, changing things up a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's okay because discussing the news is always fun, and that just means you can look forward to the Monuments episode next week.
Exactly.
So to get into our news and updates this time, I first want to start off with happy birthday to Jason Grace.
Aww.
That made me a little sad to say, actually.
Yeah.
Who had a birthday on July 1st. You can still celebrate. You can still celebrate birthdays in the underworld.
Yes.
It's allowed.
It is.
But there's some... I retweeted a really nice piece of artwork today, I think, of Jason Grace, and I really thought it was beautiful. So you can check that out on our Twitter, which may or may not be around for very much longer. I don't know.
Still be around when this episode comes out.
I'm not going to worry about it until it happens. Everybody keeps leaving to other sites, and I'm like, we've done this before. Like, I was going to start a site on Hive, and that never went anywhere.
Right.
So, like, I'm not worrying about it until I literally cannot log into Twitter.
Same. I'm hanging out until people actually decide where we're going next.
Yes.
Because there's, like, 75 Twitter-like things that I need people to tell me which one we're actually using.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was about to make an account on, what is it, Spoutable?
I've never even heard of that.
I'm pretty sure it's Spoutable. I was ready to make an account there and, like, was going to start figuring it out. And then the entire romance community ganged up on the owner of the site because he started making, declarations about what was pornography and what was not, and how you couldn't talk about this, or this on his site, and blah, blah, blah. So it was a really bad moment. It was about 3 months ago now.
Okay.
It's been a while. So that one is now off the radar, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, one of them will rise to the top.
Yeah.
And when it does, then I will make a new account and start over.
Yeah. It's just so frustrating because we've worked really hard to build. We don't have a huge number of followers on Twitter, but we've worked really hard to build our little community.
And we appreciate each and every one of you.
Yeah. And, like, you know, this is a good further shout out to maybe follow us on Instagram if you aren't already, because that is one of the other sites that we use frequently.
If I am terrible at it.
And I wouldn't mind, you know, shifting over to that as the primary thing. But, like, because we're audio and stuff, like, I don't think Instagram, like, really suits us as well as Twitter does, because you can have, like, better discussions on Twitter, which is kind of, like, what we're about.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll do what we can.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It's flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah. It'll be
much fun. Like Percy.
Yes. You would appreciate it.
He's always. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I also want to shout out Sarwat Chadha, who has Fury of the Dragon Goddess coming out on August 1st. And he has been posting these really awesome pieces of art on Twitter. And honestly, like, so this is not from Reed Riordan, but the artwork very much looks like it's from Reed Riordan's, like, artist, maybe? I don't know. The artist for at least this first one is Kevin Keel. And I don't know if that's the person who typically does Reed Riordan's art or what, because I've tried looking before to see if, like, they have an artist listed. Yeah. And I haven't been able to find one. But this is just coming straight from Sarwat. And the first character that we're kind of meeting in Fury of the Dragon Goddess, which I feel like, okay, yeah, says, meet Rabasu, demon of bad backs and influencer. If you read Lonely as a Demon from the Cursed Carnival anthology, you already know about her unusual ... tastes. She returns 1st of August. So, is that the story that you read? Because I don't think I read that one because I hadn't read his first book, City of the Plague God, and I think you were reading a lot of the books.
Right.
Like, I was reading the short stories based on the books that I read, and you read the other ones.
Yeah. So I think I did. Gosh.
It was a while ago.
I do not remember very much. Yeah. I think I remember liking this one, though.
I don't know. Yeah. It's been a while. I don't blame you. But I really like the artwork, and Sarwat's talked a lot about how much he loves this character and posted, like, a little clip from the book, and it was really funny, so I'm excited to get to know the character more. And we should definitely, like, at least I should definitely go back and, as we read more of the books, like, go back to the short stories that I didn't read before, because...
Same here. Because, like, we've read so many more books now that I hadn't read any at the time, so I just took all the ones that you hadn't read. But, like, now there's characters I'll definitely recognize that would make so much more sense to me now that... Yeah, so I really should do that, too. Yeah,
that'll be fun. And then the second character is Lugal, the first warlord. He has fought in every conflict throughout history, and he is a broken, haunted man. He wants peace, but his version of peace may be more terrible than any war. That reminds me of, like, Ultron.
Yeah, a little bit.
And also, this guy looks like he would give Ares a run for his money. Like, the size of his hand is gigantic.
I don't know. There's something about his size that also gives me, like, Hagrid vibes.
I could see that.
It's, like, a perfect merging of, like, Ares and Hagrid. And I don't quite know how I feel about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't either, because those are two very different characters.
Yeah. Like, for sure.
I also wanted to mention that Sarwat has a brand new website, which is very pretty and shiny and new. And apparently he built it himself, so...
Good job!
Yeah, I thought that was really
great.
This
is very, like, classic and clean. Yeah. And I love it.
It's got some nice colors, and it looks really nice. I desperately need to have a website.
And you get to see the whole, like, book jacket. Like, the current banner on the top is... The Fury of the Dragon Goddess art, but you get to see the whole thing, like, in one shot, and it's, oh my gosh, there's so much going on.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Love it.
And also, there's just lots of fire, too.
Yeah, like, a lot of fire. Mm-hmm. And water.
Yeah, I really like how this is laid out. It's And there's even a countdown to Fury of the Dragon Goddess. 29 days.
I wasn't going to say it, but it also, honestly, is a little reminiscent of Subjectify Media.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, it's kind of got that, we have the simplicity going with the teal and the black and the white, so it just feels very familiar.
Yeah.
But it's very different. Like, the way some of the things he did do with it is very different. And it looks really cool.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for him.
Speaking of Rick Riordan Presents authors, you can get signed copies of both Ballad and Dagger and Last Canto of the Dead in hardcover by going to Daniel Jose Older's shop. And if you're into the High Republic, there's lots of signed editions, you know, issues there as well. So lots of really good stuff in this shop.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Reed Riordan wrote an article titled A Roman Demigod's Advice for Incoming Freshmen at New Rome University. And I really liked this article a lot, actually, because it's kind of the first, like, Chalice of the Gods related article. There is no real, like, information about the book in here, but because we know Chalice of the Gods is basically about them trying to get into the university, the fact that they're starting to write articles about it is like, okay, soon we might, like, get a new, like, meet this character in this book or, like, other things about that.
Yeah.
Would be really cool. But also, it actually gives, like, really great advice, like, actually sound advice for going to college and what to expect and what to do and what not to do and that sort of thing. So if you are college-aged or you know somebody who is, this is a fun article that's actually very practical. So share it around.
Good job.
Yeah. We were not following Orpheus Collar on Instagram, which I have since rectified because I was not aware of that. And he is currently sharing, or at least shared at least one sneak peek of the House of Hades graphic novel in his stories, which has since disappeared, but you can find it on Twitter. But I thought that was very important. So we are now following Orpheus Collar. You should as well, and keep an eye on his artwork, especially the ones related to Percy Jackson, because... Yeah. That's why we're here, after all.
It definitely is.
And according to the WGA website, Jonathan E. Steinberg has been listed as the showrunner of Percy Jackson and the Olympian Season 2. Now,
I got all confused.
Yeah, this... the first thing I want to say is that don't get too excited.
Okay.
Because this does not mean that Season 2 has been greenlit.
Okay.
Officially.
Got it. Tempering excitement.
Yes, but it is a good sign that it's been listed on there. They're probably talking about it. And a good sign that he, you know, liked being on Season 1 enough that he's going to continue working on Season 2.
There were so many people, and I'm sure these are people who didn't really know, and since we don't have the first season yet, like, we haven't seen it, they didn't realize, but there's so many people freaking out about him being the showrunner for Season 2, and they were like, he's such a good showrunner, like, he did, you know, Black Sails, and he did this, and I was like, I got really confused, and I thought, oh, we have a new showrunner, and I told Karen, and then she goes, Kristen, I'm pretty sure that's the guy that ran the first season. And I was so lost. So Twitter led me astray, but it wasn't their fault. It was my fault. But yeah, no, I'm excited that there's at least, like, there are still pieces moving, even with the writer's strike, which is putting a lot of things on hold.
Yeah.
Because right now would be the time that they would be breaking scripts for Season 2. Like, this is when they started writing Season 1 last year. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, they had writer's room stuff in May and June last year.
Yeah.
So it hurts a little bit that they're not able to be writing right now, but as soon as the writer's strike is over, hopefully they'll be able to start really... Because I know Rick had talked about, like, they started working on Season 2 scripts, but they obviously have put that on hold in the meantime while they wait for the WGA thing to figure itself out. So, we're just all hoping for an end to the strike so that we can get back and get Season 2 rolling.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of people are worried about, like, the kids aging out of their roles and stuff like that, and somebody was like, I wonder if they'll have to change the prophecy from, like, age 16 to age 20, and I was like, I don't think they're gonna do that, and you would be surprised by the number of people who can play younger than they are, because, let's be real, if you've watched Teen Wolf, Crystal Reed was playing, what, a 10th, I think, did they start off as sophomores?
I think so.
She was, like, 30 years old.
Yeah. Like, well, that's, like, the entire cast of Glee. The only person who was their age was Chris Colfer. Everyone else was, like, at least 5 years older than the age they were playing. Chris, Corey Monteith was, like, 28, playing 16.
Yeah. And, like, he did a great job.
Yeah. So, like, honestly, I don't think it's going to feel as weird, even if these kids who are basically the ages they're supposed to be in the books. Even if they age up a couple of years, I don't think it's going to be the same as, like, a Stranger Things problem, where those kids aged up so quickly, mm-hmm. and they had years in between seasons, and it was like, I feel like this is going to be okay. Yeah. Even if we have a year between the first and second season because of the strike, even if things get delayed a little bit here and there, I don't think it's going to be as noticeable a problem as we think it is. Like, right. I think they'll be able to manage the ages without really throwing things into chaos. Yeah.
I always think back to, like, Neville Longbottom, because he shot up and became quite handsome compared to the chubby little boy that was introduced in the first movie. And they did a really good job of, like, kind of making him still look like that character.
And they used to put him in a fat suit with the big fake teeth. And, But no, like, by the final movie, totally different, you know. But it did still felt like Neville, and it didn't really bother me. And,
yeah, it felt like a natural progression. Yeah. So I think that they'll be able to do that. And, like, of course, there's nothing they can do. They're moving as fast as they can, you know.
And, I mean, they can... There are makeup tricks and things that they can do to at least make them feel like they're a little younger. Mm-hmm. You know,
even the way that they dress, like, can impact
that. I was going to say, like, Stranger Things, I think they basically kind of just bought into their own issue. Like, the problem they had was these kids are aging up faster than we want them to. So I think they just accelerated the story and changed the years and, you know. So I think with that, it was a little more of just Netflix caused an issue they didn't need to make.
Mm-hmm.
But because they didn't schedule it fast enough and because shoots took longer, it was a problem. But I don't think we're going to have the same problem for Percy. You're going to be reusing a lot of sets, and the ones that you can't reuse for Percy, they can, take stuff from the previous season and, like, rework it a little.
Mm-hmm.
And with the volume stage, it makes everything a little simpler, because you're not building all those sets. So I think it'll be fine.
So do I. Here's to hoping.
Yep.
Chalice of the Gods obviously is coming out in September. We know there will be a book tour, but we don't know exactly when or exactly where, save for one stop, Rick will be going, because it hasn't been officially announced yet. However, we do know that he is going to Seattle, Washington, because the place that is hosting the tour stop had to, like, confirm it so early, and so it's already up. I'll put a link to that if you're in the Seattle area and you want to get tickets right away. Becky tweeted it out. It's still, you know, a ways away, I guess.
And this is, like, a physical going, not, like, a virtual event.
Correct.
This is a stop on the tour. He will physically be there.
Yes.
That's cool.
And I guess we do kind of know when it is, because this is on September 26th, which is actually the day the book's coming out.
Mm.
So this might even be the beginning of the tour, because that's how it was for the Boston stop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's possible. But that's exciting and cool, and if I can, I'm going to try to go to this one as well, because I had so much fun at the last one, but we'll have to see where the stops are. Unfortunately, I cannot fly to Seattle, but...
I was going to say, you're going to Seattle, Karen? I was a little confused.
Oh, no. I meant go to the tour in general, not to Seattle.
Yeah, I'm hoping maybe there'll be a stop a little closer to where we are. Maybe it doesn't have to be right here, but, like, even, like, Chicago or something would be doable.
Chicago would be very doable. Mm-hmm. Detroit would be better, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Detroit's in a day trip. Chicago would be, like, a weekend.
Yeah, definitely an overnight trip.
Yeah.
And this is kind of just a random bit of, it's not even news, I just thought it was really funny. So, Slash Film tweeted out, what are your controversial movie opinions? And Becky quote tweeted it saying, there are some very good and, dare I say, excellent moments in the Percy Jackson movies, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. There are some very classic moments.
There was a reason we discussed the movies, it's because they're not all bad.
Yeah.
There is some really fun stuff in
there. But what I thought was even more interesting, and I did not know this, was when she tweeted, Rick has never watched the movies, but that doesn't mean that I haven't. My father and I took my youngest son to see the first in 2010. Unbeknownst to me, my son's classmates were also in the theater. They filed out after the movie with some sad tears in their eyes. which really kind of made me laugh. Mm-hmm. But I like that Becky went, you know? Yeah. Like, Rick couldn't. He couldn't bring himself to do it, which is fine. But Becky went and took her son. And that had to have been exciting, if not a little disappointing as well.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the books were created with their son in mind. And, you know,
right.
So I can't imagine it wouldn't be exciting to want, you know, like, as the kid, just want to go see it.
Yeah.
Even if Dad can't do it, just can't bring himself. It's like, that's what mom's for.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was really cute, and I wanted to share that.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to mention that the BBC will be interviewing Rick for Chalice of the Gods, and there is, I'll put a link in the show notes where you can submit questions if you are interested in doing that. And I guess this is a good time to say that, like, we're recording this episode basically a week ahead of when it's going to come out, which is why you might be like, but guys, like, this is old news, all of this stuff. And there's the, you know, X whatever, XYZ has dropped. Why haven't you talked about that? It's because we're doing it ahead of time. And we'll do a news catch-up episode when I get back from my trip. And then we'll talk about all the things.
But you can always feel free to send us thoughts and feelings and all the things on any of our social media.
Yeah.
And we will see it.
And we'll keep up on Twitter retweeting stuff. So, yeah. That's that. And I didn't, there's really kind of no point in mentioning this because it's going to be over by the time you guys listen to this. But if you've been paying attention to our Twitter, you know that Rainbow Crate opened up orders again for the Sun and the Star because they had so many people who wanted them and so many people who missed out on it. Like Kristen.
Who has not ordered it yet, but I had a bit of a financial landslide fall my way. And so now I can afford the book.
Yes.
I was trying to be a good budgeting girly and not spend money on books I already own in other editions. I mean, Fourth Wing's already created a problem. But I definitely can afford it, and I'm really excited. So I'm actually going to place my order tonight and make sure I get a copy. So what the reason we're saying this is, you should follow us on social media, because if you followed us on social media, then you would have seen the millions of posts that Karen has made about, like, Rainbow Crate. Because
I didn't want people to miss out, you know? Like, hey, I wanted them to see it.
100%, because I missed out. Fourth Wing's next book is called Iron Flame, and it's coming out in November. And Waterstones had an exclusive edition that I didn't realize was going to sell out in an hour.
Oh.
And I didn't even think about it. I was like, oh, I want to buy Sun and the Star. I haven't bought that one. I can't afford it. I'm not even gonna look at it. I'll look at it in a month because it's a pre-order. Right. I didn't think a pre-order could sell out.
Yeah.
It's a pre-order. You're finding out how many you want to order. Floors me. Anyway, I've been told that there's a possibility that it may reopen, like, once they have better numbers or know what they can print or whatever. So I'm keeping an eye. But I'm very excited that I will be placing myself in order for the Rainbow Crate Sun of the Star, because it is very beautiful, and I'm really excited to own it.
Awesome. So hopefully you guys got a chance to get that, and if you did, take pictures and send them to us, because I will never stop looking at this book. It is so beautiful.
Show us where you are reading your special edition of
bonus points if you can capture it, because it glows in the dark. I can't believe I forgot that was a thing.
I am really excited about that. Yeah. I'm going to go stand in a closet.
Just be like, it's pretty, look at it glow. And then you'll have to leave to actually, you know, read the book. There's something
and
you
come
said
out of
about,
the closet.
I was gonna say, there's something you said about going to the closet to read
this
book.
There's a joke about coming out of the closet with my glow in the dark copy of Sun and the Star. There's a joke in there, I just am too lazy to find it.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for the news this week. We will be back with more in a couple of weeks, and we are skipping the discussion, like I said, so now it's time to jump right back into the King Chronicles.
Yeah, we've got chapter 14 today, entitled A French Guy Almost Kills Us.
It's a quality.
It's
quality
a good
chapter title.
It's a very Rick
chapter
title. I like it. Recap-wise, Sadie, Carter, and Zia walk through a massive open room while memories of the gods float around them. They walk through the Hall of Ages, tell the Chief Lector their story, and here they're going to be tested.
Now I can't hear the Chief Lector without thinking of Hannibal Lecter. And, like, so every time I picture him, he's got this, like, mask
on
his face.
Yeah. Like, it really messes with your visualization because, like, he has a name as of this chapter, next chapter?
I think so.
No, I think we meet him at the end of the chapter, and we actually have him a name, so now I can stop thinking of him as Chief Lecter. But, man, when we first, like, rolled up on him, we found out he was old, and he was just kind of, like, sitting on the step. I was, like, picturing Hannibal Lecter, like, strapped to the board with the mask on, and I'm like, that is not accurate, Kristen. Yeah.
That would make the book a lot more interesting, in probably not a good way.
Right? Not good. No, definitely not good. Okay, so I think the first thing to kind of dig into in this chapter is Carter's description of the Hall of Ages.
Yeah.
Because it took a minute to try and process all the crazy things that are going on in this giant room.
Yeah.
So it's basically, like, he describes it as being so big. There are double rows of stone pillars holding up a ceiling, and it's so big and so vast that you could park a blimp in there without any trouble.
Yeah.
So, like, you just, I mean, I'm thinking, like, you can barely see the ceiling. Like, it's there, and you can kind of see it, but, like, it's just there.
It's just this cavern of a room.
Through the middle of it, there's a shimmering blue carpet that looks like water, and we find out quickly that Zia tells them to stay on the carpet, so surrounding the carpet is the rest of this room, which poses issues. We'll get to that.
Yeah. I assume that's, like, representative of the Nile.
I mean, it has to be, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Other words, why is it blue?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I would imagine that's probably accurate. There are balls of colored fire, and they're all different colors, but each ball is basically one color. Balls of multicolored fire floating around, changing colors whenever they bump into each other. I love this concept. I want to know why.
Yeah.
Like, why are there floating balls of fire?
Yeah.
Why are they yellow? Why are they purple? Why are they green and blue? And, like, I want to know this. I'm sure it just has something to do with the mystique of the Hall of Ages.
Right.
But I love the concept of it, and it's really cool.
Man, seeing this in the movie will be so beautiful if they stick with that.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. In addition to these balls of fire that are floating around, there's also millions of tiny hieroglyphic symbols that are just drifting in the air, and occasionally they combine into words and then break apart again and find new combinations. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's like a book where the page, where all the letters on the page are floating around and they just randomly make sentences in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, picture of it in the air in a room and, like, wow.
It was really cool, and I like that Carter, like, grabbed one of them that looked like a pair of boots and then it kind of, like, disappeared. And
yeah.
It was, yeah, it's really beautiful and mysterious and, like, so magical looking.
Yeah, definitely. The columns that are on either side of the carpet, in between each column, there are images that are shifting and depicting events of a time period. We quickly find out that this is basically a timeline, so, like, you're watching things, they're starting, like, at the beginning of time when they enter the room, and it moves toward the present. Mm-hmm. So, you're just watching all these different random things go by, even though they're not supposed to be watching. But we'll get there. Okay, so at this point, They're walking through, and Sadie and Carter are just looking around, trying to take everything in, and Zia is, like, walking head down, straight ahead, ignoring what's, you know, around her. She is clearly, we know that the first gnome is where she's from, so, like, she's clearly walked through this room, like, a number of times, and it's not as novel to her, but, like, I can't imagine, like, just being told to ignore it. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, you're watching historical events and things, figures that you know from textbooks or whatever,
yeah.
And you're just, like, watching them do things, like a movie. Like,
come alive, yeah, in front of you, and especially somebody like Carter, who's interested in the history, right, and stuff. Like, how could you not look at that?
Yeah, it just, I felt so bad because Sadie almost steps off the carpet, kind of being pulled toward one of these visions, and Zia pulls her back kind of just in time before she can really truly leave the carpet, and tells them, like, don't look at it, don't give pain too much attention, keep walking, that's most important, and so they do. Yeah, and as I said, it's a timeline. They're walking through each age of Egypt. It starts in the Old Kingdom, which is the first great age, the second, and each time they move into a new age, the color, like the background color, kind of changes. Then they move to the Middle Kingdom, which is a bloody, chaotic time. It's when the House of Life really came into maturity. They then step into the New Kingdom, which was the last time that Egypt was ruled by Egyptians, which leads into the Ptolemaic times, which is when Alexander the Great conquered Egypt. He set Ptolemy as pharaoh, and it founded that line of Greek kings that were ruling over Egypt, which we talked about way back when we started talking about Red Pyramid. We talked about the Ptolemy, like, time and how it combined Greek and Egyptian mythologies a lot. So that makes sense that it was kind of the last of the major time, like, major... up until modern present time.
Right.
It's like the last great era. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Era. I agree with that. And it was so interesting because I'm so glad we did that overview like a couple of weeks ago. I mean, at this point, it's probably a couple of months ago, actually. Because it really has, like, you know, I don't remember a ton from that, but, like, it does make me go, oh, wait, I remember talking about that. It makes it a little more familiar. I kind of understand it a little bit better now. And this is so interesting because next week when you hear us talk about the monuments that we're going to talk about, I reference a lot of, you know, like Ptolemy and the Greeks taking over Egypt. And, like, there's a lot more history in this book than in Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Percy Jackson is very much about mythology.
Yeah.
And they do talk a little bit about ancient Greece and the history, but not like this.
No.
This is very reliant on ancient Egyptian history and timelines and eras and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And I really loved this part. I loved that it was color-coded. Like, that made my brain very happy. But also, it's such an imaginative way and, like, an interactive way to show this history very succinctly for readers who can kind of understand, like, how things evolved over time. And you get, like, this basically info dump.
Yeah.
But in such a way where it's, like, still so interesting to read on the page. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I loved that as they left one era and walked into the next, it was, like, a threshold that everything just has a new shade of color. Like, it's so fascinating to me because it feels almost, it feels very filmy.
Yeah, it does.
Like, it's very picturesque. You can picture this happening on screen. Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, okay, so they walk from the first stage, which is probably, like, a darker brown, very, like, you know, whatever. And then it walks into, like, a bronzy color because you're getting newer. Yeah. And as things get newer, they get brighter.
And I thought it was really cool because it starts off gold.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, that was the height of, like, mythology and, like, all that kind of stuff. And then silver and then bronze.
Yeah.
And, like, you could tell that things were, like, in a way almost getting, like, duller because as they go along, like, things got bloodier, things got more complicated. You had other people coming in. And, like, this idea of magic wasn't as strong. Like, it was just really well done.
And then by the time it gets to Ptolemy, it's blue.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, kind of, like, fresh. Like, it's kind of a fresh start, but it's also, you're losing the whole color palette of what came before with all those metallics, and you're moving into a totally different take on...
Do you think he did blue specifically for Percy Jackson since that was the Greek era?
I mean, it
could have been a nod to that.
It feels like it could be, for sure. Okay, so they make it through the Hall of Ages without losing anybody, thank goodness. and they get to the end, and it's time to meet Chief Lector Iskender. The chief lector doesn't sit on the pharaoh's throne. Carter can see it ahead of them. There's this, you know, not necessarily ornate, but a pretty sizable and stoic throne sitting in front of them. And it's pretty obvious that it's the pharaoh's throne, but the lector is sitting on a step in front of it, not on the throne itself. We find out quickly that Iskender only speaks Alexandrian Greek, which is his birth tongue. So his French right-hand man?
Yeah.
Basically.
Bodyguard, kind of?
Yeah, kind of. He's basically a translator. He's an everything guy. He does a little bit of everything. And his name is Desjardins.
Okay. I was wondering how to pronounce that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's Desjardins.
Okay.
Sadie is not exactly reverent when it comes to talking about Iskender, and Desjardins takes offense so quickly, and I just loved that it's very appropriate for Sadie to be making jokes about how old he is, and, like, that, like, surely that's not, like, this guy, he wasn't born in this time, but, like, he definitely was.
Yeah.
And so I loved that little bit with Sadie. as they're meeting Iskandar, Carter remembers Amos telling him about the law against summoning gods that Iskandar made. Like, he created the law. And as Carter's remembering that, he looks up at the Chief Lector, and he just smiles at him. Like, the Chief Lector smiles at Carter, and it's like he could read his mind. So we don't actually know if he can, but it certainly seems like he at least has an idea of what Carter's running through in his head.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely sees beyond what is right in front of him, and given that he is so old, his abilities are probably so beyond anything else that anybody else in that room can even think about that, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he could read Carter's mind.
And it's worth noting, I didn't put it in the notes, all of the hieroglyphics are coming from Iskandar. So, like, something about him is, like, creating these symbols that are just floating through the room and coming from him. So I thought that was worth noting, too.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me because I remember looking up, like, what a lector was when we were discussing that. And, like, it being a lecturer, the fact that he literally has the hieroglyphics coming from his mouth is just... Oh, it's so interesting, and I really wish we could have actually learned more about him specifically.
Agreed, definitely. As Carter is kind of, like, freaking out and thinking about these things, Desjardins translates Iskandar's Alexandrian Greek and says, "The master says not to worry. You will not be held responsible for the past crimes of your family, at least not until we have investigated you further." And it just kind of solidifies to Carter that Iskandar has something else going on.
Yeah. And also, that's very ominous.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Desjardins is not their biggest fan.
No.
Iskandar almost comes across, like, if someone that ancient can be frail and come across as, like, powerless, this guy definitely doesn't come across as powerless, but he also doesn't come across as, like, mean either.
Yeah.
He's just a very old man who's sitting at the end of the room waiting for them to come to him, and Desjardins a little more confrontational.
And, like, super by the book.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he wants to stick to the rules. Iskandar seems to understand that rules are important, but to a point.
He's like, I've made the rules. If I want to break them, it's fine.
Right? It's fine. I'm allowed. So as they're there, Carter and Sadie kind of start talking about what's happened, all the stuff that's happened to them. And Iskandar insists on hearing their story, even though Desjardins is, like, happy to just kind of write them off and get rid of them.
Which was very interesting to me. You'd think that he'd want to know more information to catch them in something. But, like, it was almost like he didn't, for some reason, he just didn't want to know.
Yeah. I have a lot of issues with Desjardins. He's got issues. That boy's got problems. I was not... There was no way he reacted to anything that just felt like what I would imagine a person would react. Like...
Yeah.
Like, these two are Julius's kids. The one has been with Julius for a long time. So clearly, they at least knew about Carter, even if he didn't really know about them. But there's no fascination at all. Like, Julius broke a major rule, yes. Yeah. But, like, he's been around for a while, as far as we know. And, like... There's no curiosity there. Like, he just seems like he wants to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I don't know, something about it just felt off to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so Carter starts to tell their tale, the whole story of their father picking them up and taking them to the museum and everything that's happened since. And Sadie kind of jumps in when Carter takes a breath and when there's a gap and she can fill in some details. But they both just sort of seem to have an understanding that there are certain things they need to leave out of this story, including both Sadie's magic abilities and the translating and all of that, as well as the encounter with Ba from a few minutes ago that mistook Carter for someone else.
Air quotes.
Yeah. Which I thought was just one of those, like, sibling telling things when you, especially in a book like this, where you've got magic and mythology and things going on, it's always funny when siblings have a way of just kind of, like, knowing.
Yeah. And I also love that because they're not on the same page right now. They are still very mad at each other, but they also recognize that they're in this together against, you know, the other magicians in the House of Life and whatever's going on with that. So, like, they're still, like, together. They're still, you know, a team despite being mad at each other right now. But what I found even more interesting was that there was literally a voice in Carter's head telling him to hide from the chief lector telling him to omit certain information. So this was very interesting to me. I have some ideas, but I was wondering if you had any ideas.
I wasn't sure if it was meant to be like a literal voice, like someone he doesn't recognize, or whether it was like a sibling thing. Like a kind of like they were telling each other, and so that voice was like them non-verbally communicating. So I wasn't sure if this was supposed to be a literal voice. But I did make note of that kind of in my reading, like, oh, there was a voice, huh? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a literal voice, and I think I potentially know what this is all about, but I'm going to save it for later.
I'm not okay with that, but I get it. I definitely get it, okay? All right.
Yeah.
As they're telling their story, they wrap it up, and Desjardins doesn't believe them. He flat out denies that Set could have possibly been released.
This is so dumb, given everything else that's been going on that they know has happened.
This gave me major Cornelius Fudge in Order of the Phoenix vibes.
Yes.
Like, it's that denial of the thing that's a little far-fetched, but not that far-fetched, considering you live in you're a magician, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Like, anything is possible. If the gods existed once, there's no reason why they couldn't be released now. Like,
yeah. Burying your head in the sand isn't going to do anybody any favors. Even if right. you don't believe them, like, don't flat out deny that it's possible.
Agreed. And that, I think, is the most disappointing thing, is you're just like, come on! Like, this is the thing you can't believe? Like,
yeah.
Really? I just walked through a room with history playing on giant pretend, you know, floating TV screens, basically.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that's just not possible.
Whatever. This guy has hieroglyphics spewing from his mouth.
Right?
He is literally thousands of years old, and you're like, nah, Set can't be out. Nobody released it.
Not a possibility. Nope, definitely not.
Oh my god.
And in that moment, kind of in defense of Carter, Sadie unwittingly admits to having worked with Bast,
mm-hmm.
and that Bast was like a friend of theirs. And Desjardins is almost excited to be able to use that as proof that they've been consorting with gods and wants to contain the contamination. Basically, means kill them. Destroy them, get rid of them, let's just be done with the whole set.
Yeah. The whole set in Scotland. I find this very interesting, and I mean, I think we've talked about this a little bit before earlier in the book, about how the gods, like, it's so interesting to me that Desjardins is like, we don't even want you talking to Bast.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is like a goddess that people used to worship. Like, there's such a disparity between the two now, where like the gods are meant to be contained, they're meant to be hidden. And yet, like, it's so hard for me to understand, like, why that could possibly be true. I mean, it's very clear that, like, they can be very dangerous and stuff. We've seen that enough in Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
That they cause a lot of trouble. But this idea that you're not even allowed to talk to a goddess, like, is super, like, what are you going to do, mortal, you know?
Yeah. And like, it's not like they had an option. Like, it was, you know, bastard death. So, you know. Yeah, again, this is just another part in which Desjardins disappoints me, and it annoys me that he's so quick to just be like, okay, let's get... Clearly, he wants nothing to do with these two for whatever reason, and is willing to just get rid of them.
Yeah.
It's at that moment that Iskandar kind of puts his foot down and steps in and says he wants them tested, and we quickly learn from Zia that this test is not the kind of test that you fail and walk away. If you fail, you die.
Yeah.
So, not gonna lie, there's some fourth wing going on here. There's a fly or die thing going on in my head. I know they're not gonna fly dragons, but, you know, it
would be cool if they did.
It fits very well with this whole idea of you're gonna pass this test or you'll die, and then you won't be a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And that pretty much wraps up this chapter. The next chapter is a little lengthy, and we're gonna get to that in our next in the next episode, but this one had so much with the Hall of Ages that just, like, walking through all of that, walking through the history and reading the chapter, it takes a minute to kind of settle and let your mind kind of absorb all the things that are going on in this room.
Yeah.
So it felt really long, even though it wasn't really.
No, but there was a lot of information.
Yeah.
A lot of new information. A
lot to take in, and people you're meeting and all that.
And even compared to some of the previous chapters we've had recently, this one still was a little lengthy.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And that takes us to our favorite quotes and our favorite moments. Mine is the final line of the chapter, This is not the sort of test you fail, Sadie Kane. You pass or you die.
It's a good way to end a chapter.
Zia is very...
She's got the quotable. Best lines.
Yeah. Every time she talks, it's like...
I could put that on a poster.
What was your favorite?
Mine is super random, but I just really loved the imagery. It was Carter describing what the Chief Lector looked like, and he said, his skin was like lunch bag paper, brown, thin, and crinkled. I can imagine exactly what that looks like. It's such a good, like, metaphor. Yeah. And I was, like, really impressed by it, so I wanted to pick it.
Good job, Carter. Slash Rick. Okay, and then for favorite moments, I liked the whole thing with Carter and Sadie just sort of knowing which parts of their story needed to be kept to themselves, and the voice telling them, you know, omit this, leave this out. I mean, especially with what we know, what we've kind of learned about Chief Lector Iskandar, he might be able to read minds a little.
Yeah.
So maybe he knows even more than they're telling, or knows that there's something they're omitting, but he doesn't seem alarmed by it. He doesn't seem even interested to try and pull it out of them. Like, he's letting them omit it, too. So it's all just very interesting that they left things out, and they did it on purpose, and he hasn't really stopped them. So we'll get to more of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then, Karen, what was your favorite moment?
The Hall of Ages. It's just so cinematic, like you were saying, and just being able to kind of see the different eras and learn so much information so succinctly. I think it was really well done.
Agreed. Definitely. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune in to Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack, is currently getting the same treatment. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and that is always a huge help. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes, or content you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have some feedback this week, and I will throw it to Karen for our two little tidbits of fun.
Yeah, so this is actually feedback from what will be 2 weeks ago for you guys, because I tweeted out the episode about Bast, which was really exciting, and we had Nicholas reply to us and said, it's so fun to hear things about the Egyptian gods that I hadn't before because they were way less common in the books I read growing up. I'm totally going to write a research paper citing this episode as reference, JK. And I said, haha, I wouldn't expect a very good grade then, but yeah, it's a lot of fun delving into Egyptian mythology. It just wasn't as prevalent in school or, like you said, the books I read as Greek mythology was. It's cool to learn new things. And he said, I think the Egypt-focused books I did have were mostly pyramids are neat, right? There was some random Scooby-Doo book I had where most of my Egypt-related knowledge came from, not counting the Kane Chronicles. I thought that was really interesting because I am not familiar with that Scooby-Doo book or anything like that. I was trying to think of how many episodes of, like, Wishbone had to do with the ancient Egyptians.
I was just about to say, I know Wishbone went to the pyramids.
Yeah.
I know that that happened. And also, the art museum has had, growing up, had a really good, like, Grecian and Egyptian exhibits. So, like, I feel like I learned a lot going to the art museum, too, and kind of learning about the hieroglyphics and what they mean and, like, all of that, too. So, yeah, I definitely learned quite a bit from Wishbone and things like that.
Yeah, I learned so much from Wishbone.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I love that show.
Such a good dog.
Yeah. And then we also got a reply from Miss Bobalicious on Twitter, who tweeted us her two cats and a bunny, Joshua, Buffy, and Toby. Toby's the bunny, who said hi to Callie because Callie had to get some dental work done. She had three teeth pulled. Because she has a genetic disease where it's like an autoimmune disease where her body attacks the enamel in her teeth. Mm-hmm. So they were already starting to get loose, so they decided to pull them during her cleaning. She actually has like rebounded back really fast. She, when she came home, she was really wobbly and I started crying because she looked so old and like decrepit, like she couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. She's like 8 years old. So, I mean, she's like technically a senior cat, but she's on the lower end of that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was really upset. And she's been kind of avoiding me for a couple of days. So I posted an older picture I had of her. She has since forgiven me, although I still have to give her medicine in the morning. Mm. Thankfully, it's liquid, so I just have to, like, shoot it down her throat.
Yeah.
And the one she takes pretty well. The other one's really bitter, though, they said. Oh. So she doesn't enjoy that very much.
But come on, vets. Figure out a way. Make it less yucky.
But she's probably happy because she gets fed wet food right now for, like, 7 to 10 days. She doesn't have to eat any of her dry food. And she loves wet food, so she's probably living her dream.
Yeah.
Although now she wakes me up in the morning because can't automatically feed her wet food.
Yeah. So. It's not as easy.
Yeah. But I think she, and then she also had to get her arm shaved, which we didn't notice for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And, but she's like a little, she got a little bear patch.
She's got a little patch.
Yeah. On her leg. But
so cute.
I think she's doing much better now. And then hopefully those teeth won't give her any problems.
Yeah. She seemed like she was pretty much herself when I came in today, so that's good.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for reaching out. And, by the way, your bunny and kitties are so cute.
Yeah, that bunny just looks adorable. I love cats and bunnies together. There's just something special about that.
Yeah. They're so cute.
Yeah.
So, thank you. We loved it. It was adorable. Okay, so next week we're going to talk about those monuments like we talked about last week. We're going to do that, and we'll also talk Red Pyramid Chapter 15, so make sure you give that a read. And until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.